going to go ahead and get started. Is that okay, Dr. Chen?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us and for taking the time from your schedule to get educated. I'd like to introduce our fantastic presenter today, Dr. Chia Li Chien. So thank you so much for being with us today and for sharing your information. So Dr. Chia Li Chien, she's an assistant professor and director of the Financial Planning Program at California Lutheran University. She serves on the boards for various national financial service associations. One of them is CFP. And she holds a doctorate in financial planning and is also a CFP. To add, she wanted to let us know that Cal Lutheran is now having a scholarship for those who are seeking CFP education requirements and for those who want to become a CFP. So that's fantastic. So thank you. On the NAFA LA side, I'd like to let you know that we are having some upcoming events in May, June, and July. Just keep a lookout in your emails, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and through phone calls. So we'll keep you abreast of what's happening with NAFA LA as the weeks go on. So with that, I'd like to pass it on to Dr. Chia Li Chien. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Joanna, and thank you everyone for taking time out to attend today's session. My name is Chia Li Chien, and as Joanne have mentioned that I am a practitioner. I specialize in succession planning, and I have very honored today to share with you my experience as well as the research that I have done in the past regarding about selling a practice. And for the most part, the research, even though it was done about two years ago, but still very relevant in today's environment. So my in the middle of the picture, you can see my in-laws. They immigrated to the US from Taiwan in 1976 with their three young boys, which is in the back row that you can see in the picture. My husband was at the time only roughly about 13 years old, and as many of you probably know that immigrants, it's really hard when you first came into the country, especially if you have a family, to just go to work. So they did like any other immigrant's family do, that they started out a business and later on became very successful restaurant business in Connecticut. When my husband and I just about to get married in the late 1980s, that my in-laws decided to retire. He was roughly closer, about 3 years closer to 70 years old, and he decided to call a business broker and decided to just hang a sign in front of the business and see if there's any taker. It took 1 year, has nobody interested in their business. The second year, my father-in-law suggested to three other business partners, they have a total of four partners in the business. He suggested to the partners as saying that whoever wants the business, just make an offer. Second year gone by, no interest. And then the third year, finally, the youngest partner of the business, he was about 45 years old. He decided that he's gonna buy out the other three partners with one condition, and that is that he has no money to buy out the other three partners. He said that, but the best he could do is just return their original investment in the business. The business at the time was worth $3 million, and my father-in-law's original investment was $65,000. This is over a 20 years period of time. If they were to have a proper planning in place, he would have sold his portion for $1.2 million. But my father-in-law walked away with $65,000 very, very happy, because he could have just closed the business with nothing, but at least he got his money back. That's his mentality. And so today I'm gonna go through and share with you that in any business, and many of you are sitting here listening to this session, many of you are in the business for yourself, whether or not you have a team or not, whether or not you have a client who is in the business or not. You need to be aware of that roughly about a third of the business in the US close out without selling. My father-in-law's business was one of those examples, very, very close to that, closing the business without cashing out. Eventually, my father-in-law was able to do an internal transfer, which means a transfer to another partner, but with very, very minimum cash coming back to them. Or you can have the third-party sales. And the third-party sales is probably, for the most part, people are familiar with. You simply call up a broker or some sort of selling agencies that they will be able to sell your property to a third party in the open market. Each one of these third section of the businesses that unfortunately that most of them don't necessarily have proper planning in place. Today, I'm going to take you through several different things. I'm going to talk about succession planning. I'm going to talk about some rule of thumbs that in terms of how to look at your business as an entity from a value perspective. I'm going to talk about a couple of different type of deals that potentially you might come across, and some practice structure that really want to make you think through how you should operate your business if you are in the long haul and eventually wanted to cash out to support some portion of your retirement. And then we'll talk about the next step. Before we get started, I have this poll that available for everyone to participate. I'm gonna see if I can try to copy this. So bear with me, I'm gonna try to copy this and put it in the chat box for you. So you could actually just click on it. I'm gonna put it in the chat box, bear with me. Okay, so it's in the chat box. If you wanna go ahead and grab that, copy that and then paste into your web browser and to have that ready so then we could have a little bit of interaction as we go through the presentation. I'm going to give you a moment to set it up. Hopefully that you have the opportunity to do that. When you set it up, you should be able to see the very first questions coming up. All right, I'm going to move on to the next page, assuming you've got the information already. All right, first question. What is the percentage that financial planning or financial services practice that do not have succession in place? What is the percentage a financial planning or financial services that don't have succession in place? So if you could enter your answer, please. You know what? I made a mistake. Bear with me. I haven't turned on. My mistake, somehow, somewhere that I forgot to turn on the poll. Bear with me. This is a live audience show, so you do expect to have, yes, Lynn?
You might want to let them know that they have to copy the link and then exit full screen so they can get to their browser.
Oh, thank you very much, Lynn. Yes, you copy the link, paste into the web browser, and then come back to the Zoom. Otherwise, you won't be able to see the interactions online. All right, so can some of you able to enter the poll now?
I'm getting there.
Well, good.
Do you have to agree to the cookie policy?
Yes, it does. You have to agree to the cookie policy so it will push some information down to your web browser.
It says as soon as ChaiChen 388 displays a poll, we'll update this area to give you the voting options.
Interesting. That's okay. Oh, great. Okay, now it's coming up.
Okay, now I got to enter my screen name.
Okay, now it's coming up. Okay, good.
Can't you just enter it by raising your hand?
Why don't you just enter it in the chat box? That's an option as well. You can put it in the chat box too. So to monitor choices, the chat box.
Yeah, the choices are 62%, 68%, 73%, or 80%.
Okay, thank you, Lynn, for facilitating that. Wow, we have quite an interesting answers coming back. Some of you, for the most part, for the majority of the participants believe that there's a high number of financial planning or financial services practice don't have succession plan in place. And it almost sounds like we are one of those shoemaker's son that don't have shoes, right? Almost sounds like that sort of situation. So let's see what is the correct answer. Thank you very much for participating in that. It sounds like everybody's having so much fun changing your answers now. Okay. Yeah, the correct answer is 73%, guys. Okay, great job. At least you passed the voting section of this.
I have a question about how to vote. Is that, do you just put the number on there?
Yeah, you just click on it. That's all. Yeah.
You just click on and then just submit it, right? Because it gives you an opportunity to put one or two or three. So I don't know if you need to put a certain number in each box.
No, just one. But that's okay. We're going to come back to do that one more time. So at least we have a practice. So thank you so much for participating in that. We'll come back in that in just a moment. All right. So that was actually a very tricky question that I asked you. And it's somewhat probably not fair when I ask you that questions. The reality is that majority of the financial services or financial planning firm don't have financial succession planning in place. There is a reason for that. And we'll go through that, and you can see that in a moment. Why is that the situation? What should you do to address that? All right, so here is the next question. This next question, now that you have an opportunity to practice, the next question is, number of, what do you think in terms of, you know, financial planning, financial services practice, which number of these type of practice has the majority number? For example, sole practitioner, meaning just one advisor's firm. Silo practitioner is probably up to like a four partners firm, and then anything more than that is ensemble practice. By ranking them, what I mean by that is which one has the largest number of practice in the industry. Okay, all right, very good. Good. Thank you for doing that. So the most of you believe that sole practitioners has the largest amount, and roughly about the same about the silo practice and ensemble practice. Let's take a look at other information to get you a little bit understanding of why am I asking all these different type of questions. Why am I asking you about succession? Why am I asking you about type of business? So thank you very much for participating in that. So let's go through a couple of things. Let's get the definition down before we actually do anything about any type of planning. So in the industry, it's very clear that the majority of the industry has sole practitioners. Or silo practitioners or ensemble practice. Let me give you some idea of the percentage. 70% of the business that we know of is solo practitioners. Silo practitioners, meaning that you have two up to four practice together, that's about 25%. And ensemble business is about 5% in the industry. So what does that mean? That means that the silo practitioners or ensemble practice, typically, they have an entity structure, they have proper entity structure in place. Additionally, what they have is that number of practitioners or the advisors in their practice. Solo practitioner, typically just one person shop, that person may have a team. But silo practitioners is up to four advisors together, bundled together as a business. And ensemble practice actually have more than four practitioners in their business. The important part about team is that solo practitioner, you may have a one or two person team in place, but silo practice, they actually share the team, meaning that they share the resources to reduce the cost. Ensemble practice is actually a little bit different. They not only share the team, they also share process together, okay? And in a moment, I'm gonna tell you what's the dollar amount associated in terms of revenue for each one of these practices. The practice tenure oftentimes silo practice is limited to one generation only. Ensemble practice actually is multi-generationals because it's got more of a true entity structure in place. When we talk about succession planning are typically what we call the, and I'm going to write this in place, succession planning is typically your internal transfer. So internal transfer only works for silo practice, for the ensemble practices. It actually doesn't work for sole practitioners. So for those of you that indicated that a high 72% of the practice doesn't have succession planning, but at the same time, 70% are solo practitioners, that's give you an indication of people really don't know what succession planning is. So succession planning is typically internal transfer, and exit is basically a third-party sales. I'm gonna write that down. So exit is typically a third-party sales. So third-party sales could be considered in the silo practice and ensemble practice as well. So depending upon where your practice is at, based on what we have just gone through, now you have an idea of what type of practice, what type of transfer is involved. Now, if you think about, this is not necessarily related just to the financial advisor's practice. It could also related to your business owner clients as well. The larger your business owner's clients is, the bigger the problem could be. They may have family member dynamic family situation, that family member in the business. So they possibly are considering succession planning, or they're possibly considering exit planning as well. So depending upon what type of owners that you have in place, how big, how small, you may have to discuss with them differently. Succession means internal transfer, exit means sell to a third party. So let's take a look at from a business model perspective. We will not have time to go through every single business model strategy in today's session, but I wanted to at least give you an idea that this is a very simple business model canvas. I oftentimes take my clients through, make sure that their business model is still flexible, able to adapt to today's environment. As you know that today's environment, the world is kind of crazy, and you have to revisit your business model accordingly. For the most part, for today's session, I'm going to focusing just on the revenue portion of it as a discussion. From a revenue perspective, we know that in insurance, in the financial advisor, in the financial planning practice, that there are several type of revenue sources. You have commission-based. Commission could be one-time or reoccurring. Then you have this fee-based, which is typically your AUM, right? And then you have your fee only. Then you have your fee offset. Then you have your fee, hourly fee, project fee, one-time or retainer. Now, in the commission base, and many of you probably are in a commission base, what I'd like you to do is in the chat box, if you can type it in and share with me, in terms of commission-based business, which one of those is will consider a higher value for a business entity if you are selling your business? Is it one-time only commission or is it reoccurring commission? So in the chat box, simply tell me one-time or reoccurring. Okay, good, 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 good. Thank you, guys. Thank you for answering that question. So obviously all of you understand the concept here, the reoccurring will tend to give you more value in your business. And so how you structure your business is gonna make a very big difference. I started out associating with Lincoln Financial Group as an independent channel advisors. I have reoccurring commissions and I was also fee-based. Gradually, I changed my business model. I'm no longer affiliated with any FINRA groups. I'm not only a fee only, I'm also a fee from a project reoccurring basis. So majority of my clients, I would say 98% of my clients are reoccurring. They pay me a retainer fee on an ongoing basis. So my business also changed over time because of the fact that I have a better understanding how to structure a business entity to make it more valuable for me as an owner. All right, let's take a look at the next one. So in your practice, if you can tell me, how do you get compensated? Are you fee-based? Are you fee-only? Are you commission? Are you fee for retainer? So tell me so we can kind of see where we are in terms of our today's session. Where is everybody? So it looks like a lot of folks have commission, okay? So almost everybody is commissioned in this meeting. Okay, some fee-based, okay, great. All right, okay, good. So we have fee-based, commission. So roughly majority, so it sounds like majority of the participants today are commission-based. Now some is a fee-based business. So thank you very much for that. So what's the reason I wanted to talk about compensation and selling factors? Because they are all related in terms of the value of your firm. So let's take a look at what I mean by that. All right. In your experience, there are several type of rule of thumbs in terms of selling a insurance practice or financial services practice or financial practice. Can you give me some example of what type of multiples of the revenue that you know of is some sort of rule of thumbs? For example, in my in-laws, they were in the restaurant business, and their rule of thumb is they take a monthly gross revenue times 10. That tends to be their selling price on the market. Okay, so some of you say 5 years of recurring income, 2 to 4 times of gross commissions, I'm not sure if it's 3 times of what? Is it 3 times of your GDC or what is that? So there are several different type of rule of thumb selling your practice. If you don't know what that is, it probably would be good to figure it out within your network. So you have EBITDA, you have revenue and stuff like that. Okay, so that's let's take a look at what I have in place. Ooh, I think I have something in here. Let me get out and come back. Sorry about that. Something that is on my screen. Well, I can't get rid of it, I guess. All right. So here's our some rule of thumbs. We have free cash flow. If it's a free cash flow, you use 9.7 times. And by the way, these data came from many researches in the past, specifically focusing on insurance and fee-based type of businesses. So if you're looking at strictly on the free cash flow, it's about 9.7 times. Then you have the reoccurring revenue is about 2.21 times. And you have the commission at about 1.05 times. Or if your assets under management typically is 2.1% of your asset under management, and you have your gross revenue, which could be 2.23%. These are the rule of thumbs that you are going to come across as you look at many of these. I wasn't able to get rid of the black line on the screen, so bear with me. And the black line continued to show up, and I'm not sure what happened there. All right, so bear with me on that. Okay. So here is that rule of thumbs that hopefully now you have an opportunity to jot down those information. I do have the slide ready for you to download later on. So in case if you need to know any of these information. All right, let me move on to the next page. Before I go through the in terms of the valuation, I wanted to kind of ask you a question, and you can type your answer in the chat box if possible. So what makes a real estate valuable? What makes real estate valuable? Even in this COVID-19 type of situation, the real estate is still somewhat hasn't decreased in price, but it has a lot to do with what? So thank you, Jose, for answering that question. Thank you, Alvin. Yeah, so Jose mentioned about location and demand, yes. John mentioned about retained value. Yes, real estate still do well in some cases, especially in the metro LA area. They can retain value. Right, Rich, very good job. Yes, yes, Stephen, great job. Yeah, they are a stable source of income regardless, right? So yeah, we all know that the what makes a real estate valuable other than the demand and supply and the interest rate is primarily location, location, location. We all know that. So great job for doing that. But I'm gonna ask you the same question again. So what makes a business valuable? What makes business valuable? What makes a business valuable? Type that in. See if we can get some potential answer coming in from the poll website. Or if you wanted to type it in into the chat box, you could do that as well. Monte, I think your hands is up and I did not see your hands. So I'm gonna unmute you. So go ahead, Monte.
Well, I was saying prior was location and product interest and also goodwill for the last part of the question you just mentioned.
Okay, great. Great. Thank you, Monte. Right. So the what makes business value, some of you were saying, is future cash flow, the value of the business bringing to the customers, goodwill, customer trust. Yes, yes. Very good. Your ability to retain and grow the AUM for the purchaser or the perhaps the buyer, right? Size of the book, right? There are many things that is associated with the business value. So thank you very much for answering that. I'm going to switch to the next page to share with you what actually makes them a business valuable. So what makes business valuable is what we call timing, timing, and timing. Everything you mentioned is correct, but in addition to that, most important thing is timing, timing, and timing. What do I mean by that? Timing means that it is a personal timing. Is the owner ready to move on to something else? And many of you probably seen other people who just cannot leave their business, right? If they are not ready, there's nothing you can do about it. You can't force them not to come to the office. The second timing is the business timing, right? Do we, as a business structure perspective, do we already have a key management team in place ready to move on with or without the owners? That's your business timing. The third timing, obviously, is the economic timing. Like today, is it a good time to sell today? In the chat box, you can tell me, is it a good time to sell today in today's environment? Probably not, in terms of we're gonna see a wave of lots and lots of business, unfortunately, cannot sustain through today's environment. And unfortunately, they might be selling. And when they are doing that, you will have more supply in the market that will push down the selling price of any type of businesses. So the timing, all three type of timings has to be aligned for the business owner in able to have a successful exit or succession planning in place. So let's take a look at, so what impacts, so what can we do in terms of, so if I go back to this chart, so two things I want you to take away is that certainly we don't have control over the economy, but you have control over your personal readiness and your business key management team. So one thing to take away from this chart is that you have absolute control of your personal readiness and a key management team in place to help you exit at some point. This is the same message for your business owner clients as well. They have control for the first two, the personal timing and the business timing as well. Economic, there's not much that we can do about it other than the fact that if the economy is good, might be a good time to go ahead and capture that and sell, but nobody knows any of those kind of predictions. So for the two things that we have control with, I wanted to share with you a little bit about what actually impact a business value. There are three things typically will impact a business value that has something to do with if you are able to reduce certain risk in your business, if you are able to employ high yield capital in your business, and third is if you can increase your recast EBITDA. all of these will increase if you control it properly inside your business. You are able to increase or decrease your business value. So let's take a look at example of each one of these. So the first one is to reduce risk. And I'm gonna only talk about one item for each one of the area because there's just too much to cover in the one conversation here. The first thing that I wanna talk about is customer concentration. And I'm going to ask you to put that in your chat box. Tell me, do you believe your business has a very high customer concentration or low customer concentration? Some of you probably will tell me that I have 200 clients, I have 400 clients, sure, I'm very diverse. Tell me, do you have a good customer concentration, good or bad customer concentration? I'm gonna try to see that. So Jose say 1,000%, okay, all right. John says bad. Lynn says medium concentration, okay. Anybody else want to share? Okay, Joanna says medium. I'm gonna change my questions a little bit and then you can tell me whether or not you actually have a good customer concentration or not. I'm gonna say that if you put your customers into different buckets, the bucket I'm going to write on the screen is gonna help you think about customer concentration in your business. So first group will be 70 and up. This is the age of your client. First group, 70 and up. Second group will be 60 to 70. The third group will be 50 to 60.